My name is Jill Coyle, and from years of experience as a divorce attorney, I know for a fact that no one dies from divorce. The experts and I are here to show you how to not only survive, but thrive during the most difficult times.
Welcome to another episode of No One Dies from Divorce. You guys, we have the myth, the legend, the whatever you want to call it, because we have the job doctor with us today. I'm so excited for this podcast because Tessa White, you are the epitome of what it is to stop living in your excuses and making something of nothing. And your story and what you're doing today to inspire others is absolutely inspiring to me. So welcome to the show, Tessa.
Geez, thanks. I want to hang out with you more often. You make me feel good about myself already. I think I'm going to ditch my kids and go with you.
Oh my gosh. We were talking before and I was telling everybody, I feel like I just know you from your social media and what you're doing on there. It's so prevalent. It's so needed. And I eat every little bit about it. So let me tell the rest of the world about you, the job doctor. And then we're going to get to know a little bit about how you became that. So Tessa White is a founder of The Job Doctor, a practice dedicated to building career strategies and re-engage people in the workplace. She's a former Fortune 500 executive and a 25-year HR executive helping companies with fast growth and aggressive merger acquisition strategies. Her career began with Stephen R. Covey, acclaimed leadership expert. She has used her principles throughout her career to create award-winning people strategies. She was recently named in Disruptor magazine as one of the top female entrepreneurs to watch in 2021 and in USA Today and one of the top speakers to watch in 2022. Her thought leadership on the modern workplace makes her a frequent guest on national television shows and in her top tier publications. She has amassed more than 1 million followers in 18 months on social media, and she is ranked in the top 1% her live career sessions on TikTok. I told you guys, come on. Everybody should be clapping. Tessa, I know a little bit about your story. And obviously you have an amazing bio, but I want you to tell it to our story. So tell us a little bit about why you're relevant to be on the podcast, No One Dies from Divorce. I absolutely love it.
Well, probably because my real career and my story began when I got divorced. I just expected that I was going to, you know, get married and have a picket fence and a bunch of kids and life was going to be simple. Nobody told me that it could be really, really hard. Yeah. And it was really hard. My husband, he decided to tell me that he was gay and he wanted to pursue that life. And I did not know it when I married him. And even though it's the right thing for him, absolutely. It left me with my head spinning. I had no college degree. I had no way to make a living. And I had to figure it out really quick. I had three kids that were looking at me to put food on the table every day. And it was just one of the scariest times of my whole life. I can remember just like at night, just dropping from exhaustion, you know, after doing homework and cooking and trying to get ready for the next day and just going, how is this going to work the rest of my life? Like, I don't think I can sustain this. So I just started to work. I figured I had a couple of skill sets at the time, you know, and
I really do want to follow up really specifically with that, because a lot of, especially stay-at-home moms, have this thought in their mind that they're not worth anything, like that they're just a stay-at-home mom. Yeah. Which, you know, I wholeheartedly disagree with. I applaud stay-at-home moms because it's something that I can't do. I that's not my skill set. So talk specifically to that person thinking, you know, what can you tell yourself to say, you know what, you're worth more than what you believe you are?
That's one of the hardest things when I work with women to help them believe that they're worth something more and the kinds of jobs they can get. But they absolutely can. I mean, where you start is, what am I good at? What am I good at doing? And it could be for a stay-at-home mom, I'm a good community organizer. I'm good at, you know, helping raise money for the PTA. It could be something that simple that then you build on and you say, well, what kind of careers is that skill set valuable? Or you may be great with your finances and building budgets at home. You may be really great at organizing things. You've got to start with the basics and then build from there. All I knew about me at the time was I was really good at talking to adults, at people, and that didn't scare me. That was about it. And I knew I could type. That's it. And so that began, you know, at what do I do next? And how do I do this? I was a secretary turned part-time benefits coordinator at the time that I found out. And I knew that I was going to have to provide for this little family. You know, my husband went through a really dark time after we got divorced himself, and it was going to be on me. And mm-hmm. so I had to build from that and go from there. So it's really funny, you know, to hear you read that intro about me and go, oh yeah, I actually was just, you know, I really didn't have that list going into this. I had to build that as I went, but it's just so possible. And now that I work with other women, I've seen people go from being housekeepers to making $100,000 a year in 5 years. You know, yeah. It's cool.
And it's possible. I mean, one of the things that I say this, like, you know, the excuses are the bricks that we build walls in front of us from moving mm-hmm. forward. Yeah. And we are our worst enemy. We're the ones building this wall. Opportunity is endless. I've created what I call the Moxie cycle. And it's all about that opportunity doesn't happen to us. We can create it. And so get those excuses out of the way. And just like you did, you know, start where you can. And then you move forward into the progression of becoming exactly what you deserve or want to be.
You just create energy each day. You do one or two things each day that create energy towards the vision that you have. And that sounds very, very simplistic, but that really is all that's required when you strip everything else away, is just do one or two things. And right. that creates the energy to move you forward. I mean, do you think I had any clue how to build the Job Doctor? That was just a pandemic, a pandemic idea that came to me when I was bored one night and sick of watching, streaming Netflix. And so you just every day get up and you do the next step you know about.
Right.
And before you know it, you put yourself where you want to be.
And the interesting thing about marriage, and I, as a divorce attorney, have seen this a lot, is a lot of us stop daydreaming. You know, we get into our roles and we put our head down and we're doing everything else for everybody else. So we don't ever see, what do I want? You know, what is my dream? And I love a divorce because it could be used as that brand new platform to start dreaming again. And what do you want to be when you grow up? I don't care if you're 60, 50, 25 getting divorced, but it is a really great platform to finally start saying, oh, I'm going to daydream again. And I'm going to do it for me because I am worthy or I'm deserving of that.
Yeah. Discomfort is the greatest motivator to action that I know. And it's true across all different facets of life. So when I tell people, when you're feeling uncomfortable, you should just rejoice in it, because when you're uncomfortable, it means you're growing, you're learning and growing. If you are 100% comfortable when you take that next job, you waited too long.
Right.
You got to be a little bit uncomfortable with things. And I think also, I don't think if you haven't been in the workforce for a while, I don't know that you know your choices.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing that holds women in particular back, is I don't know the choices I have. So they tend to go to, well, maybe I'll be a secretary, or maybe I'll go work in retail as a cashier, because they just don't know what's available and what's out there. But the truth is, this is a really wonderful time to be a woman returning to work or going to work for the first time, because so many companies have realized it's an untapped workforce and they're willing to train you. They're willing to do the work. And say you got a college degree and you were home for 10, 15 years, there's things called returnships. And many companies offer them where they let you return to the workforce. They'll do the training and ease you into a career that can be really wonderful.
Right. And really fulfilling. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. So I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about getting divorced, or my husband's leaving me, or, you know, vice versa. I know sometimes we play gender roles a lot more, mm-hmm. but, you know, statistically men usually earn more than women. And so a lot of times when we're talking about moving back into the workforce, it is regarding a woman, but this could also apply to a man in the same situation. But, so we're sitting here and we just feel overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So talk about some steps, or break it down to like the best advice you give people to get them to that position.
The next step. Well, I would tell them the first thing we got to do is make it simple and pick careers that have a low barrier to entry. That's really important, especially if you haven't been working for a long time. So a low barrier to entry career would be HR would be one. You don't need a lot of training. You can go on the computer. You can get some certifications fairly easy and you can get in. Another one would be sales enablement or sales onboarding, where you talk with the client once a product's been sold and you show them how to use the product to make sure that they're successful. That would be a really good one. Yeah. There is, in Utah in particular, vSchool and Rise Next are both organizations who are really committed to women in tech and helping remove all barriers for women to explore tech careers, where that may feel like a high barrier. You know, I don't know anything about tech. Tech scares me. For most women I talk to, that's what they say. It lets you experiment with and learn a little bit about different tech roles. And the programs that at least Rise Next has, you can take it. They have childcare provided for you. They do it when it's at a time that's not during the work day. And then you have an 8-week program and they help place you. I mean, how great is that? It costs very little, if anything. So you want to pick careers that aren't going to require, like nursing is a hard one. You'd have to go back to school for a long time. That's a high barrier to entry.
Right.
You want to pick things where it's easy to get in.
I love that. But I think a lot of people don't even know where to start. I mean, is there like a website or something that somebody has developed for these people to go to and get all of this information?
There are a few websites I've stumbled across. And now that you put me on the spot, I'm trying to remember what it's called. I think if you Googled returnships, women returning to work, generally speaking, you're going to find 4 or 5 that are going to pop up. And you're going to find a whole host of resources. I think one of them is called Fairy Godmother. That could be wrong, but it sounds right to me. I'll have to double check. But you should be able to find, by simple Google searches, a ton of information on this and be able to start looking at potential next opportunities for you. And there's career coaching didn't used to be a thing. I mean, I'd never even heard of it before I got into it. So it's not a profession that's been around forever, but there are now quite a few career coaches, and you can find people who are familiar with career paths and can help you figure out what transferable skills you have and how those would translate into some low barrier to entry jobs for you.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like we have a business opportunity that me and you need to go into
just
make a website with all of this information in one place, because that would help, I think, a lot of people. So what is the biggest mistake that you see people do when they are, you know, applying for a job or getting ready to go out and, you know, get a new job?
Well, for women in particular, or men who are returning to work, who have been stay-at-home parents, it's that they don't see the value or understand the transferable skills they have. So they don't build the right resume. They'll end up just saying, I have been out of the workforce for 20 years. When I want them to use corporate terms to describe what they've been doing. For instance, if you've been managing your family's budget, you can translate into, you know, corporate speak around keeping budgets and helping to manage finances. and use the words, profit loss and accounts, you did your accounts payable. You can translate it into words that companies understand. If you were a PTA organizer, you can say, I helped do project management. It may have been for a fundraiser, but you still did project management and you can describe how you did it. So you have to use words that make sense. Yes. And you do have transferable skills, 100%. I promise you have transferable skills, at least 4 to 5 of them that you're not paying attention to that you can put on a resume. And the other thing I think that you can do is if you're feeling insecure, find people or projects you've worked with. And I call it a LinkedIn style reference. Put that on a resume this week and put it a 1 to 2 sentence recommendation on your resume, because all a resume does is tries to make the employer believe you can do the job. And when someone else says, this person's really capable of doing this particular thing, it's very powerful.
Yeah. And as a business owner, where I review resumes all day long with hiring and with what I do, you need to hear this. All resumes are not the same. Mm-hmm. There is a clear distinction about the people that understand what a resume is out to do and what it's not. And so it's very, very important to really spend time on your resume and to ensure, like you said, you have the correct wording, the buzzwords that really pique interest in those employers. You know, you have to understand a lot of corporate HR, when they're looking at job resumes to fill a position, the resume is the first impression, right?
Right. It is.
And we're always saying, first impressions mean a lot. So your resume needs to be on point.
And even if you haven't been working in a professional sense for a while, it is so easy to get online nowadays and take some courses in the field of study you're interested in and add it to your skills and certifications on a resume. And at least it shows you're learning, you're growing, and you're more prepared for the job than you would have been otherwise. Google also has a ton of courses you can take and test and put those, and employers actually respect those quite a bit. It may take you a couple of days to take the course. And so all of a sudden, if you have a week or two to prepare and get a few certifications listed and new skills, you look 100% better than you looked 2 weeks ago by the time you finish building that resume. Yeah. It can make a tremendous difference.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a question I'm actually really interested to know. Do cover letters matter?
Usually no. If you're applying for a job through a system, probably not, because that system is just going to filter things over and it rarely gets looked at. But if it's somebody that you know personally, or you're delivering it through an email directly to a person, then yes, they will read it. So it kind of is situational depending on how you're applying for that particular job.
I love that. Okay. So you started talking a little bit more about your story. You started as a secretary, just looking at kind of your skills. And then I know the end. I mean, I know where you end up. So tell our listeners, like, how did you get to be like one of the top executives for such a large company? And now you're, this badass teaching others how to do it as well.
Well, I started out as a secretary for Stephen Covey. That's what I was, as a secretary. I moved into a human resources coordinator. So the bottom of the barrel HR job, low barrier to entry, but anybody could do it kind of thing. Helping with I-9s and things. I moved from there into recruiting, and then something really wonderful happened. I worked for Corel, who was with kind of WordPerfect Corel in that time zone when it was such a big company, and they decided to shut their doors forever. And they told the HR, the head of HR, and that she would have to, lay off the entire company. And she said, I'm not doing that. I'm leaving. So she left. The whole HR team left. And there was no one left to shut down the company. So they said, Tessa, you're the new head of HR for the company. You now get the shit job of shutting down the company. That's what you need to do. I had no idea what I was doing. And they said, and furthermore, we have no money to give severance. So you have to keep people actually coming to work each day without any money to keep them here. So I started basically bartering for all the furniture and everything in the whole building. Like, Joe, if you stay, I'll give you the computer screen. I'll throw in the lunch, the break room fridge and the Xbox. And I just started like putting post-it notes on everything to keep people. And that was really my first big job into HR. And it was only because nobody else wanted it, which I think is kind of an important thing to think about. If you do the work nobody else wants to do, you may find that it's pretty, you get opportunities that you wouldn't have otherwise.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think going in there and being able to do whatever you can to set yourself apart from the crowd or the other party is going to be really, really important.
Yeah, it is. So. And then from there, I just worked hard. I worked hard and I picked good companies, because that's the other thing you need to do is pick companies that industries that are growing, not shrinking.
And how do you know if it's a good company?
I know. Isn't that the hardest thing? Because you go to a company and they're like, we're family here. We're like family. We're so wonderful. And you find out that what that really means is they fight like cats and dogs and can't agree on anything. And, you know, they're really dysfunctional.
And they expect you to work at all hours and, you're like, wait.
I think for somebody, if we're talking to people who've been through divorce, you know, if that's our target group, I'd say pick a smaller company to start. And the reason I say this is because you get to wear a lot of hats. And I think you can find out as well. I think it's a little more informal and you can ask some of the questions like, you know, what do you like about working here? And what's hard about working here? That would be a really important question to ask. Ask them what their turnover is. Ask them, tell me about the last person you grew in the company that was internally promoted. Who was it and how did they grow and what did you do? I think those are all really valuable questions to find out if the proof is there to say that they actually can provide what they say.
Yeah, I really like that. So going to that, those are some questions you can ask in the interview. What are ways that you can stand out in an interview?
You have to be clear on what you have to offer. And I think that's the hardest thing for most people is they don't, if you're not clear on your value proposition, I promise the company's not going to be clear on it. Mm-hmm. I promise. So you have to understand, here's what I'm good at. And here's how it helps you as a company. So you have to treat it like a homework assignment. When you go into that interview, you better be clear on what problems that company has and how you can solve them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I like smaller companies for people who haven't been in the workforce for a while is because you do get to experiment and wear a lot of hats and find out what you like, not just what you do well, but what you like. And then you can pursue that a little bit more.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And as a boss, you know, who again does lots of interviews because I'm continually hiring, you know, I'm looking for that person that has thought methodically about what they want from my company.
Right.
And I'm also looking for 5-year plans. I don't want somebody where I'm just their temporary plan until they can get to their 5-year plan. So, So you have to be thinking of those things to really, because I do. If I'm going to invest in you, I expect an investment back. And so we ask those hard questions and it's worked out. We have really amazing employees here at Coil Law and everything else I'm doing. So so as a woman in the workforce, whether you're going back, like, how can we make it seem like the dedication with us, just the fact though that we're women and we have families and we have commitments and we have this, like how do you, you know, tell a woman like it's okay to have that and still say I'm valuable, I'm worth something?
It's, you know, I'll be honest, I think it's hard. It is hard and it's still hard. It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And that is what is so frustrating is, you know, if I get on my soapbox, I get so angry at the way that companies in general think about women and women taking off time to have children and caring for children and men for that matter as well. This is something that drives me crazy. I think there are some companies that are a little more enlightened than others. But that said, it's still difficult. And my advice to any woman in the workforce would be, look, you're gonna see and hear stuff that will really upset you. People will say things or decisions will be made that you'll be like, that is not okay. And you've got to stand up and say something, because if you don't, you're still uncomfortable, whether you say something or not. You're left with a discomfort. And it wouldn't be a better place today than it used to be if the people before us didn't say something and didn't speak up. And so for me, I had some really uncomfortable conversations in my career, not just about me, but about benefits or the way we needed to view women in the workforce. And I took a lot of risks because somebody's got to say it for anything to change, right? And for a woman, I would say, make sure you carve out time for your family and the things that are important to you, because your tendency and our tendency as women has been proven that we think we have to work harder, work longer to make our mark or to have the same opportunities that someone else would have. And I don't feel that's necessarily true. And I think it's a bad trade-off to think you need to make. You do need to really work on the right work. When you're in a company, pick the most important, valuable work you can do for a company that will help you be seen and solve problems for the company. But working harder, just harder for the sake of working harder, is really stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they actually, there's been studies that have shown that women actually are more efficient with their time anyway. So, I don't know off the top, but whatever a man can do in 8 hours, like a woman, if, efficiently can get it done faster. So we're not saying work more. It's be efficient and be knowing that you're getting the job done. Knowing your value. I mean, bring value to the company. I think that's the biggest thing, is that when you are valuable, when they see that there is specific talents that you are bringing, nobody's going to care if it's 8 hours of that. What they're going to know is that you're bringing value to the company that they need.
Yeah. I can remember very clearly one day I was driving home from work. I feel like I was the worst mother in the world. It was my son's birthday, and I had forgotten, straight up forgotten, my own child's birthday. On the way home, I'm calling Smith's. I'm trying to get balloons. I'm trying to order a cake. I'm trying to get family over. And in a moment of sheer desperation, like, I call my son and I say, hey, would you like a birthday party or would you like $20? And $20 was an enormous amount. I actually bribed my son to have me not do his birthday. And I felt like crap. And then I looked around and I noticed that there's a guy, I called him Golden Boy at the time in the company. And he just seemed to have time for family vacations. He had time for, to take time off work. He took his PTO. And I was so mad. And I thought, why do you get to do that and I don't? I thought it was politics. He was just playing politics. And then I realized he was smart. He understood. He was very well respected because he did the right work. He didn't just work to work. Yeah. He didn't just work so that he could say work 12 hours a day. He did the right work that made a difference at the company. And he was very clear on his boundaries. And so, companies will take as much as you give. That is a principle that is true every single time. And so they're not your life coach. You have to be the one that decides what your boundaries are. And then the next best thing you can do is work smart.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, I love that advice. And don't worry. I mean, I've had moments like that as a mom as well. So I've taken my lessons from my working at my big corporate, law firms, big firms, and I've deduced to really create a policy here at Coil Law that is never going to emulate that. I have always given full maternity leave and, things that, I was at, one of the biggest law firms in Utah in 2014, pregnant with my third son, and them not having a maternity leave policy in place.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those moments where speaking up is pretty important.
And I remember that I was like, and speaking up, and when I left, they knew it was because of what they were lacking. They did. And they supported me. And we've had a good working relationship since, because we've been able to leave on amicable terms. But that's exactly right. And I want to talk about this because pay is a big thing. I don't understand how people don't understand that the company is always going to try to get you at a lower value than what you actually are. So when they offer you a salary, and I know some corporate jobs maybe have like baselines and they have like this, but there's always wiggle room, right?
Sure. Always.
They have to be competitive in the workplace. So it is so surprising to me as of today, how many people still do not counter when they get a job offer.
Yeah. Remember what I said earlier about how being uncomfortable is a really good sign? It's a really good sign that when it's uncomfortable for you to ask for a raise, you ask for it anyway. The discomfort fuels it forward. Let me tell you, companies expect you to negotiate, because I've been on the other end of this for many, many decades. Companies expect you to negotiate. And the surveys will say women are actually pretty good at asking for money when they feel they have permission to do so. And that's the key thing.
Yeah.
Found that women didn't think they had the permission or the go-ahead, but once they did think it was okay, they did very well. Well, I'm telling every person listening, you have permission to negotiate on behalf of yourself, because if you don't, somebody else is doing it. Somebody else is going to be getting more than you, and it can make a tremendous difference at the end of your lifetime earnings. Even at age 28, a $5,000 difference at age 28 from say 50 to 55,000 adds up to almost $1 million in lifetime earnings at the end of your career. So it's not just $5,000. You really need to learn to ask for more.
And so how do you negotiate then like a pay raise? Like you're working for the company. I've had, you know, I think we've been in unprecedented times, especially this year with inflation being so bad. And I have seen this on your videos time and time again, 2 to 3% cost of living raise is not going to cut it. And when I did my raise analysis this year, I had to recognize the times we're in and realize the value of my employees and want them to recognize that I saw that. And so talk about that. Like how are we're dealing with these times? How do you negotiate the fact that you need more money to survive this
day? Well, the first thing is, I think most people make a real rookie mistake when they are asking for a raise. They come at it from what they want and why it's important to them. They'll say something like, I really need a raise. I've been doing more work since Jane left, and I've carried her responsibility. And it's been 2 years since I received a raise. And, you know, so go on and on. That is not how you go at a raise request. You always have to come at it from what the company wants and needs. Mm-hmm. Leverage for you is all about what do I have that the company needs? And there's a few things to look at. Do you have a skill set the company desperately needs or that only a few people have? Is there a scarcity of something? That would be another leverage point you'd have. Like if 4 of you knew the job and 2 left, you have leverage because 2 people are gone. Your results are always going to be your greatest leverage. So you have to be able to put into company speak, which is numbers, how you've moved the needle in your job. And that's hard for people to do. But think about how was it before I came and how is it now? Where have I moved the needle? What have I done that's made a difference? And how has it made a difference to the company? Has it brought in more money? Has it made it more productive? Has it eliminated steps in a process? Has it created greater efficiency? Is the customer happier? How can you quantify it? When you come at those raise requests from what the company gets, not what you need and why, you'll find you get a lot more yeses just automatically because you're addressing what the company is after.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear in your videos talk a lot about like job competition. I mean, especially right now with job unemployment being so low, like how do you use, you know, other companies to help you get a better footing in the company? Because you don't want to just say that you're willing to leave for more money, but you also don't want to say, well, I'm staying for less money because why? So how do you play that kind of juggle game when you're...
Well, there's a couple ways you can do it. You can always look up what the job is worth. There are sites like Career Builder has a really good place you can go to see what the job pays for, you know, in your particular area. So you can either get competitive data and show that to the company, or one of the best points of leverage is having another company actually offer you something. But the danger in doing that is if you're going to go to the effort of applying for other jobs and getting a job offer, I would say 7 out of 10 times the people end up leaving to go to the other company because you get invested in the excitement of a new opportunity. But that is a really wonderful way to get the company to understand that you're worth more because somebody's offering more. It's kind of like, you know, it's like a house. You don't know what a house is worth until you can say, oh, look, somebody paid this much for that house. That's how you determine the worth. And right. The same is true with our jobs. If somebody else is offering that, it then becomes a proof point for a company. So you either have to do your research and do the analysis and provide it to the company, or you get another job. And those two things can both be really effective.
If you decide to do that, is your advice to never leave for a lateral move? Like it needs to always be a step up, or is there different reasons why you would do like a lateral jump to another company?
Oh, I think there's lots of reasons to do a lateral jump. There's even reasons to go backwards. Part of it is the opportunity at hand. Is the opportunity better? Is it a better fit for you? Is there something happening with the new company that would provide more opportunity and a better career path for you in the future? There's a whole bunch of considerations that I think somebody needs to take into consideration before they go. And it isn't always about money for people. Even though we like to think it is, that's the first place we go. Some people really value flexibility, and that's more important to them than the money piece. Mm-hmm. So you really have to understand what's important to me. I have a values analysis it's called Should I Stay or Should I Go, that I have people go on to, they find me through TikTok or Instagram, they can go download. And it helps you really understand what is important to me. What are the things in a job that are important for me? And is this new job or my current job a fit against my values? Because sometimes we make the mistake of saying, oh, they're listed as one of the top 10 companies. I should go work there. It's going to be great. Well, maybe not. Maybe it's a company that's a sink or swim company, and you're somebody who really wants to have a lot of training and handholding. Then it's a bad fit for you. So you have to understand yourself before you go.
I love that. What would you give for, the person about like, coming out and maybe they're a few credits away from a college degree, but they want to go and, you know, they need to go into the workplace because they're like getting a divorce. Like, is getting the college degree worth it? I think my opinions of it's changed in the last few years, but what's your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to have a skewed opinion. I still don't have my college degree. So, and I've been able to do everything I ever wanted to do. And then, but that said, I understand it is the price of entry to many of the places you're going to apply to online. The way the algorithm works when you apply online for a job is if they say, do you have 5 years of experience or do you have your degree? And you say, no, it deep sixes your resume.
Yeah. Right?
It's done. So you don't even get a shot. So it can be important. It's the part that's or equivalent experience that you can make up for a lack of degree. And I think most employers are understanding if you can make it to a real person and say, I'm not done, but I'm only a few classes away, but here's the value that I can bring. I think most employers would be still very interested in talking to you.
Yeah.
Can I talk to a person and tell them that, or am I going to get deep sixed by an algorithm I don't understand?
Yeah, I understand that. And that all goes down to is it a large company, mid-size or little?
Right.
because obviously the larger companies, that's what you're going to get. Little, there's no robots there. Like there, you're going to be able to, you know, and just like you said, it's ability to work your way up. I mean, I look at my career, you know, most lawyers in 2007, you know, it was either you go into a government job, you went to the top law school, so you got a big law job, or you worked at these boutique firms, and then that's the track you went. You know, you kind of stayed in your lane. And, you know, I didn't go to a top law school, and it was 2007. So government jobs were not to be had because of the recession. And I said, I'm going to start at a small, you know, boutique firm. And, you know, usually what people would say, well, that's my lane. That's all I can do, until I said, that's not who I am. And I worked up to work at one of the top law firms in the state of Utah. So, you know, everything's possible when you understand your value. One of the things I wanted to ask you is I'm going to actually give you my thought, and then I'd love you to comment on it, is it's about knowing your craft, being good at what you're good at. And nobody in a job is expecting you to be good at everything.
Right.
There are some horrible companies that, just kind of like you did, you're like head of HR and you're like, well, I'm just going to do what I can. But you really fixated on what you knew you were good at, and it blossomed into being very, you know, useful to them. But I have always said that if you're good at what you do, if you're good at your craft, mm-hmm. you are valued, and that company will want you for that. And so, you know, I knew if I could be a good attorney, then the rest of it didn't necessarily need to happen. So, you know,
I learned really early that you had not to, I wasn't going to know everything, but I learned that you needed to not be afraid to ask people who did know what they were doing. I would call on experts all the time when I was in my first HR jobs, and call people who did know what they were doing and say, how would you handle the situation? What would you do here? And I would outsource to partners that knew more than I did about certain things and try to benefit from others' knowledge. Because I think another mistake that we often make is thinking we have to do it all ourselves. And stage three, I teach the 5 stages of career growth. And stage 3, which is kind of your mid-career, is where you have to move from independence, doing it yourself, to actually relying on other people and collaborating. And if you can't get to a point that you can throw ego aside and call, make those calls and find out who the experts are and draw upon others who know more, you won't learn more. Yeah. You won't be good at your craft. And you can't be afraid to make that call.
Absolutely. And part of my, you know, creating opportunity is in the middle of it all, in this cycle I've created, is teachability and growth. Mm-hmm. You always have to be teachable, and you always have to be willing to grow. And the key to creating opportunities for yourself. So if you get to a point where you're like, oh, I know everything, you're never going to move from that point.
That's right.
So, I love this. What would be like the best advice you could give just the people out there that are like, oh, I've been a stay-at-home mom, or I'm, you know, getting divorced, and all of a sudden I have to take care of myself and, you know, my children. What's the best advice you can give them right now?
I would, if they're wanting to get back in the workforce, the first step I would have them take is to ask other people, what do you think I'm good at? And make a list of what they're good at. Mm-hmm. Then I would go to LinkedIn and I would specifically search for some jobs where I could utilize those skills to see what different job titles might be available. It'll take you down a rabbit's hole a little bit, but it will be such a good thing for you to, and energizing for you to see the different jobs that you can do with those skill sets, and then narrow in on something that's of interest. Once you have identified what might be of interest and narrow it down to 2 or 3 things, you can go look at job descriptions and literally see what they're asking for, quickly get the skills and certifications and training that at least begins to build a resume that looks good, and you're well on your way to landing on your feet.
I love that. And I would say the first step to that is just being brave.
Yeah.
Being courage.
Courage. It really is. I've just seen so many miraculous stories. I have watched people transform and watched them go. I talked to a woman the other day who went from being a sous chef, chopping vegetables at a restaurant she didn't own and know, she knew nothing about it, to being an owner of many restaurants that she sold then for millions and millions of dollars. And now she's in a financial advisor. So it's amazing the transformation that you can make when you start taking action and start believing and just focus on just one thing at a time. What am I going to learn? And then get really good at that one thing. And then your career will begin to build.
I love that. Well, Tessa, tell everybody where to find you because you have so much. Go follow her, guys. She just has so much information.
They can follow me on Instagram or TikTok at the Job Doctor Tessa, or they can go to my website at thejobdoctor.com. And I'm on LinkedIn as well, for that matter, under Tessa Matthews White. But they can get the greatest information, I think, on Instagram or TikTok, where every day I'm on there trying to teach people how to do this, how to get a job and how to get that.
And you're also coaching. So if somebody wanted to actually hire you to coach them through the process, you're taking clients?
Not right now. I'm not. I filled up so fast that I'm rethinking how I can reach more people. So I'm redesigning mentoring programs right now by level of career. So what is even more exciting than individual coaching is in the future, you're going to see something for probably, you know, women who are trying to get back into the workforce exclusively and people young in their career, mid-level people, high-level professionals. And those mentoring courses will be a lot of fun because you'll have a group that you can kind of be on a journey with.
That's amazing. Yeah, I understand. Like, Tessa, you're helping so many people. And the first step, like I said, is courage. And I promise you, watching her videos is going to give you a little bit. I've been watching them and I'm inspired by what you're doing and what you're teaching. And if I can say anything to, as a female in the workplace who's been working, is that you are worth more than you probably think right now. So remember that.
No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. And no one dies from divorce. Look where Tessa is.
No, they don't. Yeah. You'll feel like you're going to die. And then one day you're going to wake up and go, I feel alive again, but more alive than you ever felt before. So
yes,
it gets better.
Oh, I absolutely love that. Thanks for joining our show, Tessa.
Thank you, Jill, for having me. It's so nice to talk to you. And I feel like we're friends from another era. I feel like we could be great friends.
I love this. That's another episode of No One Dies from Divorce. Join us next week, every week, to help you understand that you don't have to just survive divorce. You can thrive through it.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice. For listening to this episode, if you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice.